Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, on a Tuesday, it is great to have you in live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, the Baseball All-Star Game on Fox tonight, a showcase of the global talent, which has exploded, which is amazing. And Joy Taylor is joining me on a Tuesday. Sorry I missed yesterday, Joy. We've each had an experience where we couldn't show up because planes, trains, automobiles, whatevs. Great to be back.
Good to have you back. Yeah, that happened to me in Miami last year during COVID. There weren't a lot of flights. Listen, and flights canceled. Nothing you can do about it.
Folks, here's what's happening in America. We have been cooped up for a couple of years. Airports are packed. Hotels are packed. Restaurants are packed. Rental cars, they're out of cars.
Yeah.
It's the world we live in. The national park system, they're closing the doors by 9 in the morning. America wants out. They want to enjoy their freedom, so it's busy. And if you travel, be warned, it'll be jammed everywhere. I want to start with this, the Baseball All-Star Game tonight. I should be a marketer. Really, I'll be as humble as I can. I am brilliant. I thought of this morning. Baseball should have a new campaign. Shohei Ohtani, better than Babe. Oh, he is, right? You know that, right? He plays for the Angels. I live in L.A. County, which is north of Orange County, and I've never seen an Angel hat here. So it's the second most popular baseball team, probably the seventh most popular sports franchise in the area of which I live. So he doesn't get a lot of acclaim and a lot of publicity. He's unbelievable. He is simultaneously an ace and the home run king. He's the only player ever to have 20-plus home runs and over 80 strikeouts in a season. Babe Ruth has always been a lot of mythology. I'm sorry, old heads, it's true. Did you know this about Babe Ruth? Most people don't. He started in Boston with the Red Sox as a pitcher. He was very dominant. Babe Ruth was a dominant pitcher. But in those years with the Red Sox, he had 49 home runs in 6 years. 8 a year. He was a pitching story, not a hitting story. Well, it was a dead ball era. 8 home runs a year against that level of competition? It must have been some dead ball. Did it come out of the coffin? They had to go to a cemetery to get the baseballs? How dead was it? Then he goes to New York, and Babe Ruth actually didn't pitch. You didn't know that. No, he only started 2 games ever as a Yankee. First year in New York, he pitched 4 innings. The next year, he pitched 9 innings, and Babe was done pitching in New York. So in Boston, he was a pitching star with power, but not that much power. Then he goes to New York. He's just a hitter, which is, by the way, a great hitter. Shohei Ohtani is doing it simultaneously against global talent, against the world's best baseball players, in a sport now that's all about specialists. People don't understand this. First of all, Babe Ruth was 6'2 and a little overweight, and he looked like a giant. Shohei Ohtani is 6'4". On the 40-man Angels roster, I looked it up this morning, he's the 5th tallest guy in his own team. Babe looked like he was a foot taller than the entire sport. Babe never faced an elite closer. He never had to face a cutter, global talent, specialist, or 4 times a night. Shohei Ohtani will often face 4 different pitchers, all throwing gas, 95+. Have you watched baseball? Dudes are cranking now. When I was a kid in the 70s, forget Babe Ruth's era, in the 70s, the dominant baseball team was the Cincinnati Reds. They had one guy that threw in the 90s, Don Gullett. He was a high school football star in Kentucky. He went on to be a great pitcher for the Reds, a left-hander, number 35. Remember him well, my favorite team, my favorite pitcher. Gullett threw 95. Only pitcher on the Reds that threw in the 90s. They had Fred Norman, Jack Billingsley, Clay Carroll. They had off-speed guys. That's the way baseball was. Baseball now is all guys throwing absolute gas. Ohtani faces all of them and rolls his eyes and rolls a ball about 490 feet. He's an unbelievable talent, but he plays for the Angels, and I'll be honest, in Los Angeles, and they're just down the road. I used to live 40 minutes from the stadium. You never see an Angels hat. You never see an Angels hat in L.A. County. It's Dodger cap, it's Rams, it's Lakers, it's USC, it's UCLA. So, and the idea, the specialist thing's amazing. Babe didn't face middle relievers and setup men, and everything now in life is specialists. Shohei Ohtani will face a guy that's job is just to set up a closer. He comes in the seventh and pitches to two batters. That's his job. Babe Ruth faced plumbers and sandwich makers and drywall fitters, if they had drywall back then. That's what he faced. Mechanics. It was your second job. You were exhausted coming to the park. Shohei Ohtani faces the world's best talent. Their job is to often pitch to two batters in the seventh inning to set up your closer. And he is destroying the sport, global talent at the same time. Better than Babe. And it's not close. This kid is a remarkable all-time talent. Baseball needs to do a better job marketing him. And by the way, you are free to use my campaign. It will offend some of the old heads. Get off my lawn. Who cares? They're not going anywhere. If you wanna get people excited about this kid, watch him tonight. It's just, there's nothing like him in my life. Nothing like him. An unbelievable talent. Okay, so everybody's freaking out. Team USA. They put this Team USA together for the Olympics in Tokyo, right? And they're doing some exhibitions in Vegas. And everybody's freaking out because we've lost to Nigeria and Australia. And let's break this down. Let's break this down. So basketball and soccer are very unique. They're the only sports I can think of, team sports I can think of, where you could go to the park and play. If you had a ball. You could play by yourself in your backyard, kick the ball around. I had a soccer ball as a kid. I just kicked it against the wall at my house. I shot baskets by myself. When I was a kid, I pretended I was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I would do my sky hook over my friend Mark Fisher, and we would play for hours on end. Or sometimes, I would just play by myself. Can't do that with baseball. Can't pitch to yourself. Can't do it with football. Hard to tackle yourself. Not going to do it with hockey much, right? But because of that, there is no economic burden for basketball and soccer. If you got a ball or somebody does, if you got a little bit of a backyard, just go to a park and play. And because of that, the talent is global. In soccer, you'll see a country like Ivory Coast be awesome. In basketball, our best players from Slovenia. With skiing, you need a mountain. With golf, you need money and a course. With baseball, you need bats and balls and gloves and teammates and a park. The world has a bunch of really good soccer players and a bunch of really good basketball players. And we still produce more of the great ones. But basketball is changing. It pays a lot of money. And kids are always ahead of adults on ways to make money. Ever notice that? They're the trendsetters with fashion, with music, with style, with TikTok, and with sports. That's why kids in California, there's no more running backs. We have a state of 39 million people. There's about two good running backs in the state a year. Why? Because the kids are all like, I don't want to get hit. I want to be a receiver and quarterback. I want to make all the money. You can find 50 good wide receivers, four-star wide receivers in California. You can find 12 good quarterbacks. Everybody recruits quarterbacks in Southern Cal. Notre Dame does, Michigan does, USC does, Pac-12 does, Clemson does, Alabama does, LSU does. Everybody does. Because the kids are like, I want to play running back and get hit. Kids see the money in soccer. Messi made $650 million. Kids see the money in basketball. There's no economic burden, barrier to entry to get in. So the quality of basketball is amazing. Think about what we're seeing in America right now. And I'm not saying we shouldn't beat Nigeria and Australia. These are just exhibitions. Shocking. We didn't get up for Australia and Nigeria in Vegas at an exhibition. Shocking. But I'm going to tell you what's happening right now in the NBA. Right now, this second, who's dominating the finals individually? Giannis. He's from Greece. The best young player. I think we'd have to admit it's Luka. He's from Slovenia. The MVP, Nikola Jokic from Serbia. The runner-up, Joel Embiid from Cameroon. The defensive player of the year is from France, Rudy Gobert. There's no reason to be afraid of it. There's no reason for fear. The winners are you and I in America as consumers. The global talent in basketball is phenomenal. I can remember, I'm old enough to remember in the 80s, you'd get the random European player. And the media would try to tell you how great they were. Oh, this guy's great, and that guy's great. And you'd be like, they're not as good as our players. Oh, they're as good as our players. In fact, recently, they're better. And they're getting really, really good, and their academy system is remarkable. It's the envy of the world. And that means if we, in an exhibition game, throw a bunch of players off a COVID bubble and a condensed season who are washed and they don't care and half are free agents and Jason Tatum's got a new coach and Bradley Beal's going to have a new teammate and Dame's going to have a new team and they're not really focused, you can lose to Nigeria. You can lose to Australia. And there's nothing to be afraid of. Basketball has never, whether you watch it or not, been more of a global game and more skilled.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
We do not like when people fib to us. Daryl Morey's a friend of the show, but he said Ben Simmons is part of our future. And we rolled our eyes and said, you got to say that to get more in a trade. But Ben Simmons isn't going to be in Philadelphia. He doesn't work with Embiid, the chemistry is bad, they don't like each other, and frankly, you better move him because his trade value is plummeting since, you know, in a shooter's league, he can't shoot. Well, a story today from Shams Charania, who's great, also a friend of the show, is Ben Simmons is on the trade block, and the Sixers are the ones that are engaging teams. He is on the move. As he should be, this is the right move for Philadelphia, who has a great player in Embiid, a good player in Tobias Harris, and I think can get some draft picks and another good player for Ben Simmons. So the thing about the story that jumped out to me is, according to Shams and The Athletic, is the Sixers want an all-star player in return. Okay, I wouldn't get paralyzed by that. The team that makes the most sense is Golden State. Golden State could use size, and James Wiseman is not a good fit. He's a weird fit with that roster. You got Steph and Clay in their primes, Draymond on the back end of his prime. You need a guy that can do things now to help you, and Ben Simmons can. He's an elite defender. He's an elite passer. He can finish at the rim, and he is long. He could be like, you know, Jokic is a point center. He could be your point center at times. Ben could really do that, or a point forward. You'd have a great ball-handling team between Steph and Clay and Draymond and Simmons. Your top four guys would all be very good in the open floor, all capable, two of shooting and two of finishing at the rim. They also have two lottery picks to the Warriors, the 7 and 14 picks. 14 is a lottery pick. They also have Andrew Wiggins. To make a trade like this, you have to have a salary that matches in the NBA. You don't in the NFL, you don't in baseball. But in the NBA, when you make a trade, you have to have like get up to 10% within the contracts. So the Warriors could give the Sixers one of their two lottery picks, probably the better one, like the 7 pick, and Andrew Wiggins. And you say, well, that's not an all-star player. Wiggins gives you 18-19. He's ready to play today. Andrew Wiggins, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and a lottery pick in a really, really strong draft, a guy that will play maybe the first off the bench, maybe your fifth starter, but you're going to get a really good player in this draft. I would not give the Sixers Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, and both lottery picks. I would, for the rumor this morning, that the Warriors want Dame from the Blazers. Now, I would give up two lottery picks and Andrew Wiggins. It's perhaps time for Portland to rebuild. I think Portland needs to think seriously about that. And maybe you get, you get Wiseman. You're big. You can trade your other bigs. It's a scary situation for Portland because then you'd have Steph and Dame. Potentially Clay. Maybe if you're the Blazers, you demand to get. We'll trade you Dame. We get Clay. I don't want to face Steph, Clay, and Dame. coming back to the Rose Garden, dropping 60. I have no interest. Maybe 90. So if there may be a deal in the works. I would give up almost anything if I was Golden State to get Dame. I wouldn't give up almost anything to get Ben Simmons, but I think Simmons answers a lot of questions. He gives you size, but Wiseman's a weird fit. Ben Simmons, a great ball handler, would get the ball to Clay and Steph. I think he'd be a great fit. He doesn't work in Philadelphia, but Philadelphia doesn't want to just get a lottery pick because Embiid's right now ready to win championships. So you've got Andrew Wiggins is going to give you 18 a game. Tobias Harris gives you what he gives you. Embiid, a great lottery pick. And maybe by the way, you can get a third team involved with Wiseman if the Warriors would give that up. You don't need Wiseman in Philadelphia. Again, we can talk ourselves into circles on this thing. But I think Philadelphia-Golden State is the pairing. It solves some issues. It would make the chemistry better for the Sixers. And Wiggins can hit a three and hit a jumper. So Philadelphia would get what they want. They'd improve the chemistry. They wouldn't be as good defensively, but Philadelphia is a good defensive team anyway. They got a lot of long wings and a lot of length. And it would give Golden State another ball handler and some size and a great distributor so Steph doesn't have to have the ball in his hands constantly. If you've ever watched Steph Curry play, the guy he's Energizer Buddy. He's running off screens. It's great. Steph does not need to have the ball. He's not James Harden. Steph doesn't need the ball to get open. So you could give Ben the ball and let Steph run around the floor and get open. I think it would give Steph. We've seen Phoenix, Chris Paul only having to play 31 minutes, not dominate the ball all the time. It gives him a little bit of a break as he's aged and has injuries. Steph's had injuries. He's getting older. You could get him off the ball sometimes with the ball. So I like it for Golden State. I like it for the Philadelphia 76ers. But now it is being talked about. The Sixers, according to Shams Charania, who breaks a ton of stories, we bring them on often on this show. Philly is engaging teams. They want an all-star. I would not make that the be-all, end-all. In the end, I just want somebody that makes us better. I mean, hell, Rudy Gobert is an all-star. You think Rudy Gobert and Embiid work? I don't need an all-star. I need a guy that's a star in his role for the Sixers with a superstar in Joel Embiid.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Team USA fell to Australia after losing to Nigeria. As Chris Broussard said, it's a weirdly constructed team. You can't just roll out a bunch of guards that can shoot. That's not necessarily a perfect team. And global basketball is better than ever. Greg Popovich got very, very upset with a reporter yesterday talking about the struggles of Team USA.
You know, you asked the same sort of question, the same family of question last time, where you assume things that are not true. When you just mentioned, you know, blowing these teams out, that's never happened. So I don't know where you get that. So, can I finish? Can I finish? Are you going to let me finish my statement or not? So you'll be quiet now while I talk, and then I'll listen to you. When you make statements about in the past just blowing out these other teams, number one, you give no respect to the other teams. And I talked to you last time about the same thing.
Well, we did beat Nigeria by 80 a few years ago. So, listen, the reality is the world's getting better. Our guys aren't taking this stuff as seriously. And the other thing is, let's be honest about this. The football culture in America is different than the basketball culture. They used to be more similar, where you both went to high school and had a coach bark at you and you played in a system. Then you went to college for 3 or 4 years and you had a tough coach and were in a system. And then you went to the NBA and you got coached hard, respectfully, but hard. And that's still a football culture in America. So guys come into the NFL, they're 23 years old, they get married sooner, they put their money away. It's intense. It is focused. Basketball culture is different. There's so much money now in the basketball shoe business, in the basketball global business, is that basketball culture in America is not building resilient players. It's building talented players, but not resilient guys. I mean, Adam Silver's like, my players are rich and they're miserable. because they're on social media. It's not something that football players, you just wouldn't say that. They come into the league a little more mature. They've been coached hard in high school. They've been coached hard in college. They're coached harder in the NFL. Basketball culture is different. You spot the talent at 16, and it is. AAU coach is doing everything he can to get the player. And then the college basketball coach is doing everything he can to get the player for a year. And then the NBA coach gets him and walks on eggshells because the quality of the skill is so great that you need a couple of these great players to win championships or you get fired. And even if you are successful, I mean, Steve Kerr coaching a dynasty, it was a struggle. Spoelstra coaching a dynasty. I mean, he and LeBron had their issues. Basketball's culture is not necessarily building resilient players. It's building gifted players. And I think some of this is you've got kind of a distracted team. We send them to the Olympics. We throw it together. It's a weird construction. The world is better. The gaps have closed dramatically. Now, should we be beating Australia? Yes, badly. Nigeria? Yes, we should be beating them. But the basketball culture is different now. And so when you throw the COVID bubble at players, you throw a condensed season at players. You know, Michael Jordan in The Last Dance was fighting his general manager and owner. In the current dance, they're fighting Twitter. It's a different culture. I get it. I'm not going to lament it forever. But our guys need to toughen up, deal with it, figure out the chemistry, because they should win these games. They should be winning these games by double digits. All right, hour two in L.A. next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
A lot of times, Joy and I will talk to a high school class, or we'll go to a college class or a broadcasting school, whatever, and we do a couple of these, one or two a year, and you know, people ask and you do them and they're fun. You talk to kids. And a lot of times I'll talk to like the parents of kids. People come up to me all the time. Oh, my son wants to be a sportscaster. My daughter wants to be a sportscaster. Could you give them advice? And I'm always very reluctant, very reticent to give advice. And here's why. There's no one way to do it. What worked for me may not work for you. I could be sending your daughter, son down a goofy path. I came from a small town. I didn't go to a great broadcasting school. We didn't have a lot of money. I ended up doing baseball play-by-play in Vegas. My car caught on fire. I had no money. I just kept my head down, and 30 years later, here I am. So it's the same in sports. We always think, and you know, parents out there, if you've got a good, let's say your son's a quarterback, right? And you think to yourself, okay, I got to send him to this camp. He's got to be this way, and he's got to have this coach, and he's got to go to this school. Well, how many Alabama quarterbacks are rocking in the NFL? How many Ohio State quarterbacks? Yeah, not many. Here's a list. The NFL executives, coaches, and players voted on the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, and it's fascinating. And it proves there is no one path to success. This is the highest paid position in America's most popular sport. Patrick Mahomes went to Texas Tech and had a losing record in college. Number two is Aaron Rodgers. Nobody offered him. He went to a junior college, then transferred to non-traditional power Cal. Also dropped in the first round. Tom Brady struggled to start in college. Six-round pick. Number four is Russell Wilson. He started as a freshman at North Carolina State and as a sophomore and as a junior. And then his coach said, you're not as good as Mike Glennon. He had to transfer to Wisconsin. Number five is Josh Allen. He was not offered by a single Power Five school. He went to Wyoming. We'll skip to number seven, Dak Prescott, who does not have an elite throwing motion. His coach, Dan Mullen, came on our show and said, I like the kid. I hated the way he threw a football. He went to Mississippi State in the fourth round. Number eight is Lamar Jackson, still has his critics. I'm no longer one of them. He went to a basketball school, Louisville, almost dropped out of the first round. Justin Herbert's number nine. He was the third quarterback taken. We called him too stiff to make it in this league. And Kyler Murray initially liked baseball, and he had to transfer too. He had to transfer. Only Matt Stafford at number six had a linear path. He was number one high school player. near Dallas. He was number one college guy at Georgia. Went to a big power. And number one pick in the NFL. And has gotten his brains beat in and can't win in the NFL. Hopefully that changes for the Rams. He had the best path, right? The clear path. Great high school program. Great college program. Goes to the NFL. And he has the second worst winning. Well, he actually has the worst winning percentage of all these quarterbacks who have played for more than like 2 years. Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, you can't really, you know, we're not talking about their winning percentage, their kids. So Matt Stafford, that's what most parents think you have to do. My kid's got to be a great high schooler. He's got to go to a great college. He's got to go number one. Hey, nonsense. There's one guy in the league and he can't win any games. And hopefully in LA he does now because he has support. There, we have a quarterback in this top 10 that went to a junior college. Two had to transfer. Some are fast. Some aren't. Brady isn't. Lamar is. Some are tall, Josh Allen. Some are short, Kyler Murray. Patrick Mahomes had a losing record in college. Nobody talked about Patrick Mahomes, and I love college football, and I didn't watch him play in college. I mean, I saw his highlights. I didn't watch Texas Tech games. They weren't any good. So it's a great example that it doesn't have to be one way. When you ask advice, there is no one way. The quarterback is the highest paid position, the most important position in America's overwhelmingly number one sport. And Aaron Rodgers went to a junior college, and nobody thought Josh Allen was worth a scholarship even to Oregon State. And Tom Brady couldn't start in college, and Russell Wilson's college coach didn't think he was as good as Mike Glennon. And Dak Prescott doesn't throw a perfect football. And Dan Mullen admitted, I didn't like the way he threw. I really didn't, but I just liked the kid. That's why football's great. It's a story of America. The most important position, Joy and I have said this, half the NFL, half is undrafted. That is utterly remarkable. Half the NFL is undrafted. There is no one way to success. If you're a young person watching my show and you're a man and a woman and you don't have a lot of money and you can't afford the good camps and you don't get the private tutors, nonsense. It doesn't matter. Head down, work hard, believe in yourself. You will get there. Don't listen to anybody. There is no one way to be successful. And I love all these guys on that list. It just jumped out to me. I'm like, good God, outside of Stafford, they all had goofy paths. There is no one way. I mean, look at that list. Third round guy, sixth round guy, fourth round guy, junior college guy. Two guys had to transfer. One's 5'9", one's 6'6".
I bet if we looked back over the years, too, this would be consistent over time as well.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Simms went to a college. I grew up with Jim Zorn as a Seahawk fan as a kid. I don't know where he went to school. I think it was like Cal San Luis Obispo. He's a left-hander. There were no left-handed quarterbacks. And then I got Dave Craig, and I think he went to a college that's now defunct.
I mean, Terry Bradshaw, Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, we could just continue to go down the list.
There was a time, Joy, that North Carolina State had three starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and Ohio State and Alabama combined had zero. North Carolina State had three. They had Phillip Rivers, Russell Wilson, and I think Glennon. They had three quarterbacks at one point starting in the NFL, and all the powers had none.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, John Smoltz played for 22 years. He was an 8-time All-Star. He'll be on the broadcast tonight. Fox Sports has the only All-Star game that's frankly worth watching in America still. And John joins us from Colorado Live, beautiful Denver. So what was the best part about being an All-Star for you? What did you take from, because you were in so many big games through your career. What made these special?
Well, you couldn't wait to get there and represent your team. It was such an honor. And to play with some of the guys that you competed against, you felt like you checked into that extra league. And just rubbing elbows with the likes of those veteran players when I was a rookie and seeing how the whole thing transpires, it's kind of surreal. When you're young, you just can't wait to experience it. And then when you get a chance to do it multiple times, it never gets old. And I enjoyed every one of them. There's only one I couldn't compete in. I was hurt in my shoulder, and the one in San Francisco. But just being in the locker room with your peers and feeling like you've reached a level of you know, like checking in, right? Even if the guys that you're in the room with, you feel like you don't measure up with, for that moment, you're kind of on that team and you feel incredible.
Shohei Ohtani is throwing 100 miles an hour and he's going to end up leading baseball perhaps in home runs. I'm not sure which he's better at. I think both are hard to do. I'm trying to think of the most talented baseball players I've ever seen. Dave Winfield always struck me as an insanely talented guy. Are you kind of blown away? Did you think he would be this good in the bigs?
No, there's no way you could predict this. As a matter of fact, I thought they kind of rushed both aspects of it. I really felt bad about his arm when he came in. And, of course, he had Tommy John. So now that he's recovered from it, he hasn't gotten the reps on the mound to even give the universe an opportunity to see how good of a pitcher he is. And the hitting aspect is just something phenomenal. If you'd have told me that he would end up with 33 home runs for the year, I'd say pencil in MVP. Give him the MVP right now. That's how great of a year he's having. It's only the first half. I know we are in an era where there's a ton of home runs. And proportionally, Babe Ruth hit way more home runs proportionally than the league did as opposed to Ohtani. But what Ohtani is doing, you just can't comprehend. As a pitcher my whole life, I had to spend the whole week trying to get ready for 5 days to pitch. He's spending the week sharing energy and trying to do both. It's just not possible to do this at the level he's doing it. And I tell people all the time, and I know they shake their head at me like I'm crazy. I'm telling you, if he never hit again and all he concentrated on pitching, he'd be the best pitcher in the American League, hands down. And I know that's a big time statement to say, but when you're a pitcher, you need about 90 to 100 starts to figure it out. He's what? Roughly a quarter of the way there. And he's having to share the duties with a high level, by the way, offensive attack that he puts on. So this is as talented as it gets. Maybe Bo Jackson, when he played baseball and football, the combination of power and speed. Deion Sanders, again, with the speed and playing two sports. This guy's playing one sport, but two different positions and making it look like it's no big deal.
Yeah, that's really well put. The world we live in now is a specialized world. You have a setup man and a middle guy. He's facing setup people and blowing through them. I mean, the idea, we say this all the time, Michael Jordan tried to play baseball. He couldn't. To do two things well is just unbelievable. By the way, the Mets, Pete Alonso, is he the best pure power hitter? Is he a throwback? What do you make of what he's doing?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that when you watch BP, you just can't take your eyes off of him. And I think he understood what he wanted to accomplish. I've never seen anybody more motivated, more locked in, more excited to do something that, you know, gives the fans a thrill. He is an absolute strong human being. And I think in a way you can make the argument that his claim is accurate, because what he did is just incredible. 35 home runs, and he was enjoying every swing. It felt like he could have kept going and hit, you know, well, he hit over 100. So I just loved his attitude, and I think he's got this mindset. Not only in the regular season is he going to hit a bunch of home runs, but I think he wants to come here and hold on to this for a while.
That's great. By the way, what do you make of the Yankees' first half? Do they turn it around?
I think they do. I'm one of maybe the few people that think they do. I know they've become one way in their right-handed power batting lineup with not much flexibility and maneuverable. The lineups just can get eaten up by right-handed relievers and starters. But here's what I think. I think their bullpen's got to get better and healthier. I think their offense is going to be much better than it is. And if they get any health in their rotation, the Yankees are built to slug people.
Yep.
And they're going to slug a little bit more than they have. Now, whether that's enough to catch the teams in front of them, I still think they've got a chance when they come out of the break. They play the Boston Red Sox a bunch of times. They play the Rays. They got teams in front of them that they can do something about. But there's no doubt, offensively, they hide more warts than they do, than any other team does. And if they don't hit and slug, then the answer is no.
By the way, National League West is tough. What do you make of the Giants? If you look at the Giants roster, you don't see a bunch of, you know, you don't see a bunch of names you recognize. And yet, here are the Dodgers in a real battle with the Giants. My guess is the Dodgers just have, you know, there's so many games over the course of a season, they would wear you down. Your thoughts about them ending back in the series?
Yeah, I think the Dodgers have the best chance. They're the deepest team. They have, obviously, the experience. They weren't healthy most of the first half as far as their lineup construction. Their lineup's getting healthier and getting better. Their pitching is second to none. Look, the best story in baseball is the San Francisco Giants and the Boston Red Sox. I don't think anybody who knew a lot of baseball thought these two teams could compete this late and be this good. And you got to tip your hat to both organizations for not, you know, giving up on not only, you know, this is not a rebuild for San Francisco. This has been a resurgence. And I love the fact that when people tell you you're old or you have an old roster based on a computer output, I like the fact that the team has a little chip on their shoulder to show that they can get after a year healthy and they're not too old. So it's going to be a fun NL West. It looks like three teams could possibly go to the playoffs if they can continue, but there's going to be a lot of beating each other up there for at the top. And I still think the Dodgers have what it takes to win the division, but it's more than likely going to be three teams that come out of that division for the playoffs.
All right. Fifth consecutive year you're doing the All-Star game. By the way, we got a minute left. Who was the greatest hitter you ever faced in an All-Star game?
Tony Gwynn. I mean, he was the greatest hitter I ever faced, period. And I would not want to face him with runners on. I just never want. I couldn't strike him out. Like, Glavin, myself, and Maddox, we struck him out three times and maybe 180 at-bats, something like that. It just wasn't fair.
John's great seeing you again, my man. Thanks.
My pleasure.